It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show. Our mission is to serve and empower you so you make better financial choices in your life. One way we love to serve you is through our free newsletters. You know, I love the word free. At Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com. I hope you'll subscribe. Our writers and deal diggers work so hard every day to bring you info you can trust. Speaking of trust, I don't want you to fall prey to untrustworthy scam artists that try to rip you off on gift cards this holiday season. I'm going to address that and also the wrong way to quit your job. So, the gift card thing. Normally, during the Christmas season, I talk about all the reasons you shouldn't give somebody a gift card when you don't know what to buy them. And my pitch is the same, give them cash. But now I sound like I'm from prehistoric times when I say give cash. So when it's a relative, a loved one, a friend, Venmo them or Cash App them money instead of giving them a gift card because they can use it anywhere. Or if you still believe in something called cash, you can give them cash. But gift cards, no. Too many problems with gift cards. And I won't even get into all that because the gift card thing I want to talk about is a gift card scam that's really playing ugly now and not specific to the holidays. So here's what's going on. Criminals are doing pretexting where they're contacting people and saying, we're calling to notify you that your heat is going to be turned off. Or we're calling to notify you. They do this to restaurants. They'll say, just before the lunch or dinner rush, they'll say, your power's being shut off. There's a courtesy call that your power's being shut off. Oh, no, it's too late to give us a credit card or anything like that. But you can pay us, and every one of these scams work the same way. They create an immediate sense of urgency, followed by the only way you can pay is with various forms of gift cards. Usually, or stored value cards, like the kind you can go buy at a gas station, convenience store, Walmart, whatever, where you buy these cards that could typically will be a Visa or MasterCard gift card, Amazon gift card, whatever, and they say, you know, you buy this number of dollars, give us the number on it, give us the code off the back, and yes, we will not shut off your power. We won't do this, that, or the other thing. Wow, I dodged a bullet. And then later, it turns out nobody was calling you about shutting off this, that, or the other in your life. It was just a crook pretending to be with an organization that you do business with or that they suppose you do business with and knowing that as an individual you will be harmed or as a business you will be harmed. And you're so desperate to not have that consequence that you get ripped off by them telling you to go buy these cards. And they walk you all through it. And next thing you know, your wallet is messed up and the criminals made off with the money. So let me tell you how it plays. So you give them the information off of whatever card you buy or cards you buy. And they spend that money immediately, untraceable. And they'll use the cards to buy stuff online, whatever. And you got no way of knowing who they really were, no way of getting at the bad actors. And this is working so well. What a bad term to use. What would be the way to say that right? It's the desperados are very successful. It's stealing money from you this way. And know that if somebody calls you from any organization and says, you have to do this right now, what you do instead is you say, thank you so much for telling me. And you hang up and you go sign into your account. Or if you have the company on your on an app on your phone, or you go to the computer, you call the number you know to be customer service at whatever organization, supposedly you're going to have a disconnect or whatever it is, But never, never, never engage in conversation with the person who called you where you did not initiate that call. And on this same point, Googling a number for a company is a disaster. Do you know you take any well-known organization and you Google their customer service number, and what will come up over and over again, in spite of actually the best efforts of Google to stop this, will be scamsters with fake numbers for a company, and you end up talking to crooks who will do really terrible things to you. So you want to go to the website of a business to see the actual real number to call. You want to look at an actual bill from a company to see the real number to call. But Google searches may be good for a lot of things, not for finding a number for any company. And actually, I'm abridging this. I could talk about this topic for days because there's so many wrinkles and angles. I just want you to understand the basics of how to protect yourself from the various gift card scams.
We've got some questions. This is from Kelly in Colorado. My mortgage company is terrible. They fail to pay taxes and insurance out of escrow, and when they try to pay, they send checks to incorrect addresses, triggering fees, interest, and even policy cancellations. When I call to try to fix the root of the problem, they promise it's fixed, but then they repeat the error or mess up something else. How can I get my mortgage sold to a better company?
So you can't. This is a terrible problem, Kelly, that has been a problem for as long as I've been doing this, since the 1980s. Mortgage servicers can be a terrible, terrible problem. And by the way, your mortgage servicer owes all the fees, all the interest, and they have to give you a letter when their mess up led to the cancellation of an insurance policy to help you get it reinstated. What you should do, though, is Colorado, like every other state, has a department that issues licenses to mortgage lenders and servicers. It may be in the equivalent of the state banking department or something like that. You're just going to have to search around. So this would be a great case to use a Google search or whatever search engine you use. You find out what the appropriate agency is, and you file a complaint against them with the state of Colorado. You also file a complaint against the mortgage servicer with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, a federal agency, at consumerfinance.gov. The only pressure points on a mortgage servicer come from state and federal regulators, nowhere else. Because it's a business that is almost a law unto itself, because you didn't choose to be their customer. And when you originate a loan or a refinance, the originator of that loan reserves an ironclad right to sell your loan off to a servicer. They'll package and then they'll sell and make an immediate profit on selling that loan. And they have a disclosure that tells you how often they sell loans. And most of them say 100%. So we have no voice in the thing, and that's why it has to come from the regulators. Please let me know, Kelly, if the regulators in Colorado or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, if either or both, came to your assistance in any way with this mortgage servicer.
From Dexter in Louisiana, I have a sister with a serious gambling problem.
I am really sorry. Yeah. Ugh.
How do you recommend my parents structure their will so that she can't blow it all away? Would having it put into an immediate payout annuity be a good option? My sister has no heirs of her own.
So Dexter, an annuity would not help, because your sister would have the ability at some point to look at one of those TV commercials and sell rights to payouts from that annuity to one of those companies that pay you pennies on the dollar for an annuity. Those ads are very enticing to somebody who doesn't understand the financial implications of selling to one of those companies that buy insurance settlements and legal settlements and insurance policies and all that. They are really, really bad, ugly for your wallet. So what your parents would have to do is a very simple process where they put in their will a trust arrangement for your sister. So at the time of their death, the money would go into a trust, and it would be the second parent's death, basically. It needs to be in each parent's will. The money goes into a trust, and then Dexter, here's the rough part. You're the likeliest person to be named as the trustee for your sister. The lawyer who writes the will and writes the language for the trust writes it in a way that the money is handed out for living expenses for your sister and at the discretion of the trustee. And a lawyer can explain that to you. Interestingly enough, being from Louisiana, it is a different law than it is everywhere else in the country. They follow basically French law in Louisiana in state statute. And so the way this works would have differentiations, differences in Louisiana than it would in other states if your parents also live in the state of Louisiana. But a lawyer in Louisiana would certainly know how to do this.
This is from Jonathan in Massachusetts. For low expense index mutual funds, is there any major difference between the zero expense and the low expense ones, similar indexing from the same company?
So zero expense, they have to be talking Fidelity. About Fidelity. Did they say Fidelity?
Yes.
Okay. So the Fidelity zero funds are a special marketing vehicle of Fidelity, and Fidelity absorbs the administrative and management costs of the funds as almost like advertising to attract people. So yes, if you are a Fidelity investor, you want to be in the zero funds rather than the equivalent fund that still charges expenses. People who are already with Fidelity, you're where you are. You wouldn't want to do a transfer because you might trigger in an investment account, you might trigger capital gains taxes that would be embedded. But if you are in a retirement account with Fidelity, then and you're in existing Fidelity index funds that have management expenses, and you can go in the equivalent as a Fidelity zero, definitely you want to be in the Fidelity zero fund. It is an amazingly crazy product where a company decided, you know, we have to take on Vanguard. For Fidelity, Vanguard is like the devil's child. That's their big rival. And so Fidelity generally is not as inexpensive as Vanguard. So some brilliant minds at Fidelity came up with this idea, you know, the way we're going to beat Vanguard at their own game is we're going to get a branding image with the public that we are free, and that's why they offer the Fidelity Zero funds. And Vanguard, because it's run as a co-op, cannot make its funds free. They have to charge the actual costs of running the funds. So in the case of the zero funds, it is true. Fidelity has lived up to its word and has come up with a way to be cheaper than Vanguard and take advantage of it. So coming up next, key phrase of the pandemic, the Great Resignation, where people have reassessed their lives and they've decided, you know that job I was tolerating? I'm out of there. But if you're thinking of switching careers, there's something I want to make sure you don't do that's really in right now. It's working overtime to burn as many bridges as you can.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
So it's really in right now to do something that I think is trashy, not classy. And people think that it has no consequences, but it's become the thing to do to, I'm going to clean this up, family podcast, but to show their rear ends on the way out the door and to very publicly trash talk the now former employer that they've walked out on. And it may feel great. Maybe you worked for an employer that did treat you like dirt. It happens to a lot of people. Maybe, just maybe, you feel like you're getting that ounce of revenge by posting a gleeful video that you gave them, well, the proverbial finger. So, right now, you may not feel any consequences of that. But remember that life is a series of building blocks. And you build a reputation over time. And you build relationships over time. And even if you work at a place that doesn't respect you, doesn't treat you well, and you give them the heave-ho. It was a country song a long time ago that was titled, Take This Job and Shove It.
Yeah.
And it spoke to how a lot of people feel now and why they're posting these videos loud and proud on social media, really giving it to the now ex-employer. But remember that not everybody, it'd be a really rare place, that everybody where you've been working is a terrible person. There are probably people that are friendly, that are decent, that are also working in this awful place you've been working. And you don't want to burn bridges over your lifetime. So leave quietly. And you can tell your friends when you're with them how much that place, all right, how much that place sucked. Let's just call it that. You can do that. But to publicly shame that company is just not a great plan. I've watched some of these videos. They are very entertaining. Have you seen any of them when people
quit? I have not seen these.
Okay, they are a riot.
But even like people who quit and don't do maybe a video, but they're just very negative on the way out the door. You know, they say the way you do anything is the way you do everything. Like your reputation, so much of that stuff is, you know, and you never know who you're going to run into in the future.
I'll tell you something. Back before employers were so begging for workers, and I used to, when I had my chain of travel agencies and I used to interview applicants, it was funny, I never once hired somebody who was a very promising candidate who spent a lot of the time in the interview talking about how bad they were trash-talking a former employer.
Yeah.
Because weirdly, it reflects badly on you. Even if that former employer was terrible, it's you it reflects badly on.
Like if you're on a first date, too. You don't spend the whole time trashing your ex.
I thought that's what so many people do that are hurting do on a first date. That's why they don't have that second date, right?
Exactly, right?
Yeah. So that's what you go see the head doctor for when you're having problems recovering from a bad relationship. You like that suggestion?
I'm a big believer in therapy for everyone, for anything.
For anything, right. So anyway, please think about that. Another thing, this is crazy. Guy I know who owns a business told me that he had 28 people scheduled for interviews. And only two showed up, and only one of the 26 who didn't called to say they weren't coming.
Oh, My gosh.
I mean, we're in a weird time right now. And so, again, are you building positives for the future or are you burning bridges for the future? Please think about it. Okay, and if to you I sound like some old guy, like a parent talking to you, I do have three kids, and they have to hear this kind of stuff from me too. So just know that I am being a clueless parent right now to you if you're younger, but I know that's not my role. So let's just say I'm that clueless uncle of yours here, and I'm trying to get you to do something where at least make things neutral with a possible future or now ex-employer. Don't play rough and tumble, because rough and tumble always, somehow, someday, you just bring a bad karma along.
Well, Yvonne in Washington has a question. She said, both my spouse and I have the privilege to work remotely forevermore thanks to the pandemic. We are considering a nomadic lifestyle, traveling to and working from various countries in the world. We may or may not stay for a particular period of time at each location. We just want to play it by ear and go where the wind takes us, including various states in the U.S. My question is about worldwide health insurance. We have U.S. coverage, but wondered if you had recommendations on whether to buy worldwide coverage or simply purchase short-term coverage in the various countries we end up in. The cost of health care in most other countries is relatively cheap, so we feel like buying a worldwide coverage might be more expensive overall and would love your thoughts. On a related topic, you don't have many resources on your website regarding nomadic lifestyle needs, and given the changing work world, it would be a great new topic for you to explore and share resources about.
So as the, what is your title?
Chief, Clark's Chief Drink Fetcher.
No, you're Chief Operating Officer, right?
Yes. I am.
And so is that something that you've talked about as editorial content?
I'm going to pass that on to our managing editor, Sally, who's amazing and brilliant, and we'll consider it, I'm sure.
So I really like that because Sally is here.
She's in the studio with us.
You have anything to say? Or you just want to sit there?
She's going to sit there.
Okay. So, so that is, we love the suggestions we get for content holes we have on our websites. So to your the heart of your question. So because you said you don't know how long or short you'll stay in particular countries, and let's say with the EU, you might go to a country for just a few days, go somewhere else and the rest. I think there's value in you having one of the worldwide health policies. They are not created equal. You have to shop around for them and find something that, at least from the highlights of it, fits the nomadic lifestyle you're going to engage in. My experience with other people is that, and you could be an outlier on this, but typically people will hit the road and travel extensively for a period of 2 to 3, maybe 4 years, and then you're likely to settle down somewhere in the United States for an extended period or somewhere overseas for an extended period. And that would be when buying a local policy would be both most applicable and the best choice for you. But having one of the worldwide health policies, to me, would be a good idea. Usually they are geared towards nomadic travelers and include other things in them, like Medevac, if you're, let's say you're in a country with not great health care and you get injured or whatever. Many of these policies will include the ability to be airlifted out or transported by medical transport to a country with proper medical care if that became necessary. So I know that you're talking about a meaningful expense with a worldwide 1 year at a time health policy, but I think it's a good choice for you.
All right, I think you'll like this one from Steven in Oregon. When I transfer money from an online savings account to my credit union, it takes 5 business days. If it's all electronic and pulls it immediately and stops earning interest when I initially transfer it, who is earning the interest for the 5 days during this electronic float? The online bank or the credit union or no one?
Probably both of them are earning it. And it's a flaw in United States banking that in most other developed countries, when money is transferred from one institution to another, it is instant availability of funds at the new institution, and you're earning money, interest, at the new institution, in your case, the credit union. And the fact that you have this five-day wait is a unique and bad thing of the U.S. banking system. And I don't know when the corrective is going to come for it, because it is kind of crazy that this is not how it works in most other wealthy countries, that you move money electronically from one institution to another and still don't have access to it. The only system we have in the United States that you generally do have instant availability of funds is when you pay for a wire. And that's crazy. But you're doing an ACH, an automated clearinghouse transaction, almost certainly moving the money. And there aren't protections under the law for you as a consumer giving you the immediate access of funds.
This is from Greg in California. Before I passed my special forces training in the Clark Army, I did a bad thing. I was talked into an annuity by my advisor, who I thought was a fiduciary. Until recently, I thought I had one of the good annuities, but once I did the math, I found out that I have a horrible one. It's an index annuity based on the S&P 500, and how they pay is too complicated for this post.
Okay, let me explain. So what happens is the insurance company pretends that you're going to get the return of the stock market each year on the upside, but you'll have no downside. You won't lose money. These contracts may run 150 pages long, and it's a big, big lie. First of all, you only get a part of the stock market upside each year, and the insurance company keeps all the dividends, which account for a big chunk of what you earn on a index fund or a stock investment. In addition, you only get the downside protection if you stay in it for an extremely long number of years, could be decades. These things are garbage, and the annuity salespeople push them because the commissions on them are gigantic. Now, do we have numbers how much this has actually cost him?
So Greg says, had I just put my money in the S&P 500 instead, I would have $231,000. But alas, I have a meager $159,000, a $71,000 difference. In other words, it cost me $71,000 in fees in the last 4+ years. My question is, should I get out of this thing now and pay the current surrender charge of 6% instead of waiting 5 more years for it to mature? If so, would it be wise to plunk that money into an S&P 500 index fund? And he also says, I hope this message helps to reinforce to your listeners that annuities are horrible.
I'm trying to take deep breaths now because I get so upset about these annuity situations. And it's scandalous that annuity salespeople are not by law required to be fiduciaries. Because if they were required to meet a fiduciary standard, which means that they legally are required to do what's in your best interest, they'd never be able to sell this absolute stinking, rotten garbage. So what do you do now? I want you to go to a fiduciary financial planner. We've got a number of suggestions on Clark.com how to find one. And I want you to have he or she look through that contract for you and figure out if you're best off staying in for the 5 years to eliminate the 6% surrender charge, or if you should give it the heave-ho. The reason I'm not saying just pay the 6% and get out is we're in a cycle where we could see some declines in the stock market moving forward. If you get the minimum value guarantee by waiting 5 more years, a fiduciary financial planner may decide that it would be worth it waiting the 60 more months. Or they may run the numbers and decide you should go ahead and pay the surrender charge and get out. But anytime you hear from an insurance person, hey, we got this great investment where you get the returns of the stock market without the risk of losing money, you need to run as fast as the fastest runner in the Olympics in the 100-meter dash. Don't know who that is, but that's how fast you need to run away from that salesperson who's about to take a sledgehammer to your wallet. Now, if we didn't get to your question today, I got something cool for you. We offer free one-on-one advice from the Team Clark Consumer Action Center. And all you got to do is you got to call a number I'll give you in a second. We provide one-on-one free advice Monday through Friday from 10 in the morning Eastern Time Zone till 4 in the afternoon Eastern Time Zone. The number you call is 636-49-CLARK.